This is Claire Coyne. I'm interviewing Gerald Michaels on the 29th of October 2014 in his home near Woodford in Greater London. So, Gerald, I already mentioned your name, but if you could introduce yourself and give your preferred name and also the year that you were born.
Well, my name is Gerald Michaels. I'm known as Jerry. Used to be called Mick when I was doing drama. And what else was it you wanted to know?
The year you were born.
1932, 2nd of February 1932. That's that bit of, what else?
If you could let me know whereabouts you were born and which schools you went to.
Right.
Just in brief.
Yeah. Mother Levy's. Mother Levy's was a maternity home for Jewish people, because I lived, being Jewish, I lived right in the middle of these two turnings. They were almost like going back. My parents were first generation immigrants, and I was born in this maternity home. And I lived there in two rooms. There was my mother, father, brother, sister, and myself. I was the youngest, I was a baby. And we lived there until the war broke out in 1939. And I was evacuated with my sister. And how much further do you want me to go?
That's fine for that. If you could just list the schools,
yes,
the main school that you went to.
Well, the first school I went to was Myrtle Street. I started school when I was 3 and a half. And Myrtle Street was the first school. And then I was there until the war broke out. And then we were educated in all sorts of places in Aylesbury until we came back. Now, when we came back from that evacuation, and I'll go right through the two evacuations until I eventually came back in 1942 permanently. I didn't go away after that. And I went to Lowiston Road Elementary School, which is in Hackney. And I was there for 18 months, and I took my 11 plus, and I finished up in Hackney Downs School. And I don't know whether you know that school, you have heard of it. It became a toys near the end, but I was there for 6 years, and I loved school. I used to do drama there, and I must add this, really. But I was, the first production I was in was Romeo and Juliet, and Romeo was played by Harold Pinter. I went to school with Harold Pinter. He was a year above me.
Right? Goodness me.
Yeah, and that's I left there in 1949, and I didn't go on to university, much to my great regret, because of family problems. And I worked for 18 months in the travel business. And then I got called up, and I finished in the RAF for 2 years. And I did all sorts of things there, traffic control and everything. Came out of there, joined Marks and Spencer's as a management trainee. I was there for 2 years, and I was in the fashion business practically all my life. And I retired in 1960. I could say, I really say that I was
You
more
retired in
I was 60. Which is 1992. And I must admit that I much enjoyed my drama hobby at the time with a company called the Toynbee Players, Toynbee Hall. And I ran that from when it was taken over by the GLC, and I was them from 1958 to when their lease ran out, when Mrs. Thatcher came in. And that was finished. But, I kept with other companies. I've always done drama and play readings, all that sort of thing, which I still do now, just play readings. What else can I say?
No, that's great. There's one other thing. If you could just tell me again in brief the main occupation during your father's working life and whether or not your mum worked.
My father was a machinist in a factory. Making women's clothing. My mother never worked, except that she used to work at home. She was for tailors, bespoke suits and things. She used to do all the sewing things, but she brought up three children. That was her job. My father was, we lived in two rooms, no bathroom, nothing like that, until we moved to Hackney. And that was in 1940, end of 40, 41. My parents decided to take out a mortgage, would you believe, in that time, when the next day it could have been bombed. And they took a chance. And my father, he died in 1969 from the heart attack. My mother, she died in 1988. But unfortunately, when she was 82, she began to get Alzheimer's, whatever it's called, you know. So I don't know, I mean, but as I say, I retired when I was 60, and I managed to get, obviously I had to wait 5 years for my pension, but I became a voluntary worker for Jewish Care. And I worked in the, because of my experience with recording equipment, you know, and acting and all that, I had got into this department which specialised in producing books for the blind. And once a week we used to do a part of the Jewish Chronicle for the blind. And we used to send them out to these elderly, lay blind people. And I did that for 7 years. And after that, you know, once I got my pension, you know, I still did drama and went as far as I could. I also became, when I was 60, I became a walker. I joined the Ramblers, and when I moved here, in fact, I moved here in 91. And I used to do a lot of walking, finishing up in the New Hampshire, in that famous trail, or whatever it's called. And I had to give that up, 7 or 8 years ago, when I developed high blood pressure and I developed atrial fibrillation. And that's the story of my life.
Well, what we're going to do then is...
You're going to edit it, I know.
No, what we're going to do is focus in on the Temple of Mithras now.
Our
project is mainly concerned with that. Yeah. So if you could just begin by telling me your overriding impression of going to visit the site of the Temple of Mithras.
Well, I think I told you about when I first heard about it. It was this friend of mine. He and I were upstairs at the library, Hackney Library, in a reference department, and that's where we used to read the newspapers. And we read this little account in the Telegraph. And only two column inches or something. And they just mentioned that they'd discovered this thing. And I said, well, I think we ought to go and visit it. And before anybody knew about it, and we went down there, and we got to this site, and the fair foreman was there, and he wouldn't let us on at first. But we persisted, as you know, and we walked around, and it was a marvellous experience, because I'd never really been on an archaeological site before, let's put it that way. And you could see all the different layers. Of course, it's about 30 feet below the present level of London. And there was one layer which was completely consisting of oyster shells. And I took one of the oyster shells as a sort of souvenir, but you know, that's gone. I don't know where it might be, with one of my drawers somewhere. And then after that, it was remarkable how within, a week, it was in the newspapers. And according to this, you see, they built this walkway. And what? Thousands and thousands of people came from all over the country to have a look at it. And we thought, we got there first. And it was sad, really, because, I mean, when you think of the difference in attitude now towards archaeological sites, as it was then, as it is now, like, for example, they just dug the whole thing up and put it onto this plinth and put the building on top of it. But since then, the whole attitude is that we've got to try and retain these things in situ, which is very, very important. I mean, you know, as I say, a bit of an amphitheatre below the Guildhall Art Gallery. But unfortunately, you know, lots of the Roman London was dug up and whatever, you know, and that was it. I'm sure somewhere there must be lots of stonework, and like when they knocked down the Temple Bar, for example. I mean, and my favourite person is Betjeman, of course. John Betjeman was my favourite. with the way what he did. I mean, he was one of the first people who started the whole idea of retaining these sort of situations and keeping things in situ. So, you know, that was my real feeling about the whole thing. And also, you know, for example, archaeology, in a way, it introduced something different to my life, because I was on holiday in Cyprus and I was there for a couple of weeks and I met an American couple, and they were older than me. They were 60s and I was in my 40s. And I'd hired a car and we travelled all over Cyprus looking at all the archaeological sites there. And that started a friendship that went on until 20 years. I used to go to California, stay with them and all that. And it's a strange thing. I mean, and yet the thing is, Rome, I've never been to Rome. I haven't been to Venice. I mean, the people I've told, they're shocked I've never been to Venice. But there you are. I suppose it's somewhere I can go comfortably. I mean, you go, you know, I haven't been to Pompeii. That all these well-known places I haven't been to. But the places in this country, and I say like Cyprus, where I could go walk around with not too many people, that's the way I followed my sort of archaeological interest, really.
So it was something that endured throughout your life then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't really do it now because, you know, I can't walk very far and stand around too far, too much. But at the same time, well, they're doing a series now on television about Rome, aren't they? Which looks very interesting. Yeah.
So going back to when you were 22 and you saw this little piece in the newspaper in the library, did that grab your attention because then you were already interested in archaeology, or just because it was something different?
It's hard to say from the memory. It just caught my, you know, imagination. You know, perhaps I've always looked at myself as a writer. You know, I mean, I take a writing class at the U3A. And I always like to put things down paper and sort of try and, you know, put them for my own posterity, so to speak. And I suppose it was something that, and being a Londoner, being an East Ender, being just outside the Roman wall, so to speak, it had that extra sort of feeling of belonging, you know. And when we saw this, especially after the war, I mean, you know, when you saw the destruction of London, the city, and how they started digging things up, and not as I said, not keeping them in situ. When they had this thing came, and we thought we had to go and see it. This friend of mine, unfortunately, he's the same age as me, but he's got Parkinson's, so you know, he doesn't live very far from here. But so that was my feeling about going to see this particular thing, and I'm glad I did, because look what happened afterwards. They were queuing all the way around the block and everything. And now, I mean, I don't know, are there any more digs going on at the moment, important digs in the city?
There's all sorts of digs going on all the time. And you're probably aware that they were digging again on the same site in the last couple of years, and they called it the Pompeii of the North. Because they found so many more objects. Yeah, they found another. Well, they're describing it as 10,000 artifacts that they found.
Because also they, you know, they would, it was after that, when they were digging along by St. Catherine's Way, you know, along Wapping High Street, and they began to dig up some of the original parts of the Roman embankment, you know, which was used for shipping and all that sort of thing. And I remember taking two lady friends of mine down. They lived in northwest London. I said, I must show you my part of London. I took them down there. And I don't know how interested they were, but I was. And they dug down, and there were still the old beams, you know, and they dug them up. I think they become part of the Museum of London exhibits. I don't know.
That's all really lovely. If I could just take you back to when you did visit with your friend, I know it was a long time ago, of course. You were lucky enough, after being able to persuade this chap to get a kind of a bit of a tour with him, I guess. Can you remember exactly what your feelings were about being on the site and hearing what he was describing, or from what you were seeing? What
no one describing anything. There was no one there. There was no guide. There was just me and my friend.
Oh, so the foreman just let you on. He didn't actually show you around.
No, he wanted to keep us off. He tried to stop us going. He said, it's dangerous. I said, look, we won't be long. And we got on the site and we just walked. And we saw this little high, about that high, the walls. And there was one in one corner was the remains of a well. And we didn't know a great deal about it. We knew it was Mithras was something to do with almost a secret sect of the, of the Legionnaires. And I understood at the time that it was, it was kept very quiet in the Roman period that this was done. But I don't know how they found that out. But at the same time, it was just a part of London. And to me, as a Londoner, that was very important. So, again, this particular thing about the oyster shells, I remember that the whole... And you think to yourself, in those days, oysters were part for the poor. I mean, it was, it's only after the sort of mid-Victorian period when all the oyster beds were destroyed in storms and things, it became expensive. But it was just like, like when I go, for example, I've been to the Guildhall art gallery, and you stand there, and it's even less there. There's just a few bits of walls and things like that. But what they've done this, as I say, this Sony Lumiere, and you hear the crowds and all that. It's my imagination, So, but the thing, coming back to that particular site, we knew that it was only there for a short while. This is the point. When there was a whole row about it, that they tried to stop it being dug up. They wanted it kept in the same place. But in the end, I don't know who, very likely the government or someone overruled it, and the developers insisted that that they wanted that removed so they could do proper foundations and everything. Perhaps the building techniques have changed to the extent that they can do that sort of thing now. I don't know. But that was it. That was the time when all those sort of things were destroyed, like the Euston Arch, for example. That's going to, I understand that might be rebuilt, for example, as well. So, anything else I can tell you?
No, you've touched on something really important there about that particular chapter in archaeological history, if you like, as a profession.
Yeah.
And things are very different now, as you say. And you have already described why it felt important and meaningful for you to go at the site at that time. But is there anything else you might add about why you think so many thousands and thousands of people were interested in going?
I don't know, perhaps escapism. We'd just been, not long since from the wartime. And the only ruins we saw were the result of the Blitz. Yeah, we had ruins going back 2,000 years. And I think, the strange thing was, now that would be tweeted, there'd be all sorts of things done to it. There'd be millions of people. But in then, all you had was no television. I don't think there was, it might have been television, I'm not sure. But there's one station radio and that sort of thing, or two stations. So there wasn't the same social network. How I dislike that title. Social network, where everything is important. But at the same time, it's a positive thing from that side, that it does stop developers and people doing anything that they shouldn't. So it's all, obviously now, it's all built into all the contracts and everything that this is going to be done. And beware if you don't keep to it. You'll get people from Tunbridge Wells writing in or something, But that's the way,
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're spot on, I think. Did you visit the temple when it was resited on Queen Victoria Street?
Oh, yeah. Rather sad. It looked rather sad. It was there, and it was surrounded by... It was still lots of area that was still part of the bombing, but there was a certain area that it was still part of, and you knew it was there, and it was there 2,000 years ago. But when they put it on this plinth, no, it was a, how can I put it, it was the best they could do. It was almost a, it was a compromise. And I mean, Mr. Grimes, I suppose he was one of those really who managed to be strong enough to be able to get that done. I mean, otherwise the whole thing could have been dumped. So that was, I suppose that was, that would be the beginning of when they really started thinking about, whilst the city was still in that state after the Blitz, make the most of it, you know? And as I say, they started working along the Wapping High Street, where there's all these big blocks of flats and offices now, not far from, you know, the Prospect of Whitby, round about that area. And they began, and I went along there this time, I say, with these two friends, and they'd already dug out these great timbers, which were still existing from the original harbour thing, really.
That's incredible, isn't it? Absolutely incredible. And could you say, could you sum up, because clearly history has been very important for you and archaeology, and you've described how it's been something that's kind of run really as a thread through your life. Mm. Could you sum up in what way it's important and meaningful for you?
Well, it's important for the simple reason there's the expression, the good old days. The past always had that sort of thing about it, that it was always better in those days, that things are getting worse and all that. And that's the way I think that people are attracted. They were then. I mean, obviously, they, you know, as I say, they had the terrific response from the public. But I suppose, I don't know, you see, as I say, Pompeii, for example, I mean, what, that goes back to the, when it was first dug, I don't know, was it 18th century, 19th century, 20th century? You know, I mean, all those sort of sites, but of course Rome was known for that. I mean, to have that transferred to London as being the outpost of the Roman Empire, I suppose, was something that we could still cling on to as something in the past. And of course now with the kids, the way they've been, you know, all the educated with and the subjects that they're taking and everything, it's there's a lot more interest in that type of thing. I mean, well, when I was 22, of course, you know, it was I was working by then. I'd been demobbed from the RAF, and we were just we had at that time we were friends who I was at school with. We didn't have a lot to do. I've never belonged to a club or anything like that. And the only organised leisure I was this drama. So, but I have I'm a voracious reader. I love, you know, there was one incident when I must have been, what, 6, 7 years of age. I'd gone to the library, the Whitechapel Library, which is now an art gallery, and I'd gone to the library to get a book out. And on the way home, I finished reading it. So I went back to the librarian and I said, oh, I finished this, I want to change it. And she wouldn't let me. She said, you can't change this on the same day, she said. Well, how's that for bureaucracy? But, you know, I've always been a voracious reader, and also writing, you know. I started writing when I was at school, obviously English. And then when I went to the Air Force, I was going to do a diary, take a diary with, but you know, one thing I'm lacking is to keep going all the time, you know, do something like a diary for the 2 years of my life in the RAF. But at the same time, I've got some sketches somewhere of the people, you know, from living in for a little family with just 5 of us. I suddenly found myself among 30 fellas in a billet. And, you know, I sort of sat down and I went round and I made notes about all the people who I was be with for the next 2 years. So, in a way, this idea of, like, coming back to this temple, it's... You know, it was a great force on one's imagination. If you're told history, the thing is, I wasn't all that keen on history at school, but it's all, like a lot of people, when you don't have to learn it for an exam and it becomes a hobby, then you can really enjoy it. And that's the way it was. I mean, now, for example, history going back to the Victorian period, I'm reading all the Anthony Trollope novels. I've finished all the Barsetshire novels. I'm just finishing the fourth book of the Palliser novels. And it's marvellous to read of the House of Commons as it was in the 1860s. And, you know, and you think nothing's changed, so to speak. So that's a very personal. What I'm telling you now is something extremely personal. You know, that the way my life has gone, in a way. I was glad when I moved around here. It's a lovely, on the edge of the forest and everything. And when we've got just up the road here, we've got, what do you call it, a site. Can't remember what it's called now, one of the paths. One of these, also the remains of an old prehistoric site, you know. So it's everywhere here, and we've got to make the most of it, I suppose, while we can.
So is that how you would, because you mentioned your great niece, I think, before we started recording, who's currently 10, I think.
Yeah.
Is that how you would want to instill in her the importance of history, that it's something to do with we're surrounded by it? And
well, how can I say, I would want to do what I could with her, but she goes to school, they go to school, it depends on the teachers and whoever, whatever classes they have, and each one of us start developing our own ideas of what we want out of life, apart from being educated, and it's part of our education. And this is the way, you know, I went to the school, Hackney Downs. It was the grocer's company once upon a time. And I started there in 1943. I was there to 49. And we were, the school itself had split. Part of it had gone to be evacuated in Norfolk, but they opened up emergency classes, and that's what I joined. And most of the masters we had should have been retired long ago. And but at the same time, we managed to, you know, I've got four of my friends, they went to university, they're all sorts of lawyers and whatever. And I was the only one who never went to university, but we got an education there because we wanted an education. It's like, again, the school was closed because the demography changed of the area. I won't go into detail. And it was closed eventually. Now there's a big academy on the site now. And as far as you're talking about my great niece, I mean, she and her sister's 8, and they live at Witham near Colchester. And they love reading, and they've got two very good parents. That's my great niece and her husband, and this particular one, and the other one, I've got another great niece, is South London, but her children are only, 18 months younger. But the older ones, they're off to America for two and a half years to Salt Lake City from Witham. So, but they, you know, when I go over there, stay over a weekend, you know, I read to them. Although say 10 and 8, they like me to read to them a book and whatever. But at the same time, I try to get them interested and talk to them about history. But it was her, it was Grace, the older one, who came to me about my evacuation, because they were doing that First and Second World War in part of the GCSE. Mm-hmm. And I was never married. No, you know, so haven't got children of my own or anything like that. But so the times I went to see them, I go to see them, and it's interesting to talk to them and see what they're, you know, 10. I mean, when I think 10 and 8, well, the younger one, of course, I was being evacuated, and now they've got all this sort of thing now. Everything's going, and Grace, the 10-year-old, is a footballer. So But there's all these things with the family and what you can get out of your education. But it's like I think about creativity, whatever the creativity is. With me, I know I shouldn't say this, but you've either got it or you haven't. I mean, I've always, like I said, I did drama all these years, all sorts of things, acting, directing and everything. And I'm writing. And it's entirely, it's in a personal thing of how you manage to deal with this. You either can or you can't.
Well, we should probably start wrapping up now, actually. So I was just wondering if there was any final thought about your visit to the Temple of Mithras or Roman history that you haven't said, but it's fine.
Well, I don't know. I think I thought I've covered most of the things. I mean, can you suggest anything that maybe I might have missed? I don't know.
No, I think we've probably covered everything. I didn't ask you some little details about the day. Do you have any recall of what the weather was like, what you were wearing?
It was dry. I know it must have been dry, and I mean, we're going back 60 years, you know. It was dry, as I can remember, and it was, you know, it was dry. The actual area of the dig was dry, which helped in having a look round. What we were wearing, oh, I don't know. You know, I mean, what did I wear in those days? Long trousers and sort of a sweater or something or other. And I can't remember what time of the year it was.
Have been September.
September, yeah. And what? I mean, I could always look it up on the internet as to what the weather was like at that time, you know.
Probably good.
Oh, yeah. You could. You're doing the research.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Give me something to do.
That was the main, you know, the main feeling I got about the place, that it was there. And I'd read what was going to happen with the developers, and I felt it rather sad that this was going to be, well, no one knew how. They even hadn't decided at that time what they were going to do about it. They were trying to get them to build it in with the building in a basement, but no, they said, you know, they've got to go down 30 feet for the foundations. So there was a certain sadness, but you think, well, this was a time when archaeology was really beginning to get to build up in the city. So
that's
anything
absolutely
else?
Lovely. No, I think that's perfect. You're right, we've covered a lot, which is great. Yeah. All of my prompt questions on there we've covered. So thank you very much.